was it worth it? Has it been?
I've got a motto in the front of my Bible. It says, no questions, mm-hmm. no regrets, no return. And that would be my, that would sum up my life as a Christian, as a minister, as a missionary. I've got absolutely no regrets.
Welcome to the Disruption Zone. Opportunity lives where the status quo dies. Talking to the greatest innovators, disruptors, and off-the-wall inventors we can scrounge up. You laugh, you'll learn, you'll be inspired. Now, here are your hosts, Leland Conway and Cameron Mills.
The Disruption Zone, Leland Conway along with Cameron Mills. What up, dude?
Did you say Disruption Zone or Disruption Zone?
The Disruption Zone.
As I swallow my...
What is the name of our podcast?
It is The Disruption Zone.
We've been doing
Zone.
This for 10 episodes and you don't know the name of the show yet.
But today is the best.
God, you're such a crazy dude. No,
today is the best guest we've had.
I'm excited about this. So my dad is in town.
I'm excited you recommended this because I wholeheartedly...
Well, I thought about it. My dad is in town.
Yes.
You and I, last year, we went out... My dad... People that have been listening to me on the radio for a long time know that my parents... Our missionaries.
Yes.
My mom passed away about 3 years ago, but my parents have been on the mission field, on the American Indian field in southern Arizona for, gosh, almost 40 years.
Yeah.
I grew up out there.
Right.
And
you have a nickname, a Native American nickname you always tell me, I always forget.
It's their word for white boy.
There we go. Thank you. And what is it?
Midigun.
Midigun.
I didn't pronounce that correctly.
What, you didn't?
No. But
why?
Because I'm...
Pronounce it correctly.
I can't.
Oh, really?
That's as close as I can come.
You lived with the Native Americans.
As close
in Arizona,
as I can.
Right. You can't even fake an accent.
I'm still a dirty white boy.
Unbelievable. Is that what it means? Does it mean dirty white boy or white boy?
Just white boy.
Oh, my gosh.
So anyway, you and I went out to visit my dad because my parents founded a private Christian school some years ago.
Yep.
And my dad pastors a church there, and he's building a community center.
We built a community center.
Hold on. He had built quite a bit of it. But we climbed around on scaffolds hung drywall for a few days.
I was never allowed on the scaffolding. You all put me in charge of molding.
That's true.
Yeah.
So we did a basketball Bible camp.
Yep.
And now my dad is here helping me do some work on my house. And I thought, hey, let's talk to my dad
if there's anything less disrupting, and I mean this in the best way possible, than a missionary in the mission field.
Yeah.
Don't know what it is.
I really don't either.
Or more disrupting.
So we welcome my dad, the other Leland Conway, into the building. The original Leland Conway.
Not, that's his name. This is going to get confusing really fast.
What's up, Dad?
Not much.
He's just laughing. So
this is what he did when we visited.
I know. It's been fun.
Except when I was on the crown molding, and then he got a little bit tough on
me. You did get a little tough
on
me.
By the way, I'm upset. I assumed... When we left there, I would be getting phone calls, text messages, emails from all of your parishioners commenting on the greatness of the crown molding that I did. I mean,
you've been proud of that ever since.
It's up. Is it still up?
It's up.
All right, then. I did my job.
They took it all back.
Yeah. Here's what I noticed when we were down there. You and your cousin, right, or your nephew.
My nephew.
You and your nephew were up on, literally three stories up on scaffolding, hanging drywall.
Yes.
And I was never trusted to get up there, or I was never allowed to get up there, one way or the other. And then your dad came in and started, all right, Cameron, here's what I want you to do. And it was hanging this crown, is it crown molding or was it just molding?
Just molding.
Door molding, okay.
Molding.
All right, so just hanging this molding around the doors and down the baseboards and all this stuff. And I will say this, he seemed to get more bossy with me than he ever did with you. I mean, I have to, listen, I hung some molding more than once. And he, in a very fatherly, paternal way, let me know that that was not acceptable, that it needed to be done, and if we're going to do anything, son, let's do it right.
Let's do it right, yeah.
Yeah.
But I've heard that speech so many times before, and once you come out there to my parents' ministry, and once you're you're friends with one of their kids, you're part of the family.
Yes.
And so my dad was just catching up on giving you the speech. That's all it was happening.
And to be fair to him and me, when you and your nephew were up on the third level there, he was down with me making all sorts of comments under his breath. Now, you didn't hear any of those.
Us.
But he was just as frustrated with your all's idiocy as he is with mine.
I know it. Well, Dad, let's start with geographically. Where you're located. Where I grew up, where you are located, the community you work in.
Okay, we're located on the Tohono O'odham Indian Reservation It's the second largest reservation in the nation. Our town is 28 miles north of the border, and we're 65 miles west of Tucson.
Okay.
It's, as I said, the second largest.
What's the largest?
Navajo,
okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Navajo is on the northern part of the state.
Okay, still in Arizona, though.
Still in Arizona. Part of it, yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, sure. They're not necessarily withheld to our geographic divisions, I guess. They've got their own. So, all right, and Leland, I assume you're going to ask this, but you know all the answers to the questions that you're going to ask him, I bet. So,
yeah, I thought it'd be more fun for you to ask it because
listen, how many did I have when we were down there? All I did was ask questions.
Well, and as somebody from the outside looking in, you know what makes – What people will be curious about.
I'm going to try to. But the problem is I've been there now, so I answered some of my own questions. But I guess I can think of in terms of, okay.
Well, let's start with this. What's the climate like there, Dad?
One word. Hot.
I was going to say, I think I can answer that. Not humid. It's a dry heat, isn't it, Leland? It's a dry heat.
Cameron and I have heard that argument. I'm tired of it.
We were there in November, right?
October.
October, okay. It wasn't.
When you get to 115 degrees, yeah. I don't care whether it's hot or dry.
I agree.
It's hot.
Yeah, I agree. All right, so I'm sure Leland's going to jump in. I'll ask questions as long as I can think of them. But what led you all there? I mean, what makes a decision? Where were you and your wife before? And then what said, okay, this is where we need to go?
Well, we were here in Kentucky, lived in Wilmore, and I was pastoring. But I was also a builder, and in the wintertime, if I didn't have a building under roof, then I was pretty much out of work for a while. And I started volunteering my services to the mission field.
Okay.
And I was in Phoenix for 3.5 years supervising their volunteers.
Now, who's there? Asbury's? Okay, Wilmore's?
That's South
WGM, West. Wasn't it?
WGM.
Yeah. Okay.
World Gospel Mission.
There we go. Thank you.
And Southwest Indian School.
Okay.
When we ran out of work there, I began looking around for other work.
Okay.
And I was directed to the Teal Nation.
This is why you were in Arizona.
Yes.
Organizing the WGM. Am I saying it right? WGM?
WGM.
Yeah. That's when, okay, you're asking around now, hey, we hear there's some work over on this reservation.
Right.
I got you. Okay.
And so I went, it took about a year. We were supposed to build a church. Pastor told me that they had materials, they had the money. And so in July the 4th, I went out, and the weekend before, he had run off with a woman and left his family mm-hmm. there, and there was no money.
The pastor of that church, you mean, right. By the way, July 4th seems like an odd weekend to head out to a Native American reservation.
Yeah.
I mean,
hot weekend to head out.
Well, I didn't necessarily mean hot. Maybe I did emotionally. Yeah. Anyway, so...
And so I stayed with the church for a year, and
as just builder or as no, as pastor. You as pastor,
stayed,
okay,
stayed a pastor. I stayed with them for a year. They wanted to change their belief system, and I couldn't go along with it. So
the church did,
right? And so
okay, can you talk about that? And I know we talked about it a little bit down in Arizona, but I remember being interesting that basically what they wanted to change to, you just couldn't biblically justify, right?
Right.
Yeah.
They had been a Pentecostal church.
Okay.
And I'm not disparaging the Pentecostal.
Sure.
But I do not accept tongues, and they wanted to.
I got you.
Go back to that.
I got you. Okay.
And so I resigned.
I got you.
Went to work.
Which, by the way, let's be clear. In the Christian world, that's common. I mean, there are many of us in the Christian world that believe in the gift of tongues. There are some that don't. And both sides, you know, find justification in the Bible. I think that's part of the things that, especially in the Christian world, that there are things we find division over. There are. That's why there are multiple denominations. However, there are one or two things that we find absolutely agreement on, and as far as I'm concerned, those are the absolute most important things. And so it's acceptable to me, to stand your ground and say, look, I don't feel comfortable with this because of what I read biblically. But, and I don't feel like I can continue on in this capacity with you all. However, that doesn't mean that doesn't mean we dislike these people. That doesn't mean we don't, you know, we won't hold on to these people. It just means we're not, you know, we just don't find justification in carrying on in this way with what you all say you believe. And I guess what I'm trying to clarify is because I'm tired in our country today of And Leland, you and I talked to Adam Edelin about this,
yeah.
about how we can't we dislike people that don't agree with us. It doesn't really,
world.
Believe it or not,
yeah.
it doesn't really happen a whole lot. It does some, but in the Christian world, there is a lot of very much lovingly agree to disagree.
Yeah,
well, you're right. Agree to disagree.
Yeah,
and so after I resigned, I went to work for an Indian contractor, and worked for him for 2.5 years. My wife and Leland mm-hmm. was back here. Well, my youngest daughter.
Her name's Leland. Also, for those of you who
didn't know, no,
unaware.
And, I was out there for 2 years before my wife and Leland moved out. After my daughter had graduated from high school, I didn't want to disrupt her life.
Mm-hmm.
She was in marching band and so forth, and so I waited for her to graduate, and then Leland and my wife Carol moved out. Yeah, I was staying out there for about 3 months, and I'd come home for about a month, and until Carol was able to move out there with me. And I'd already had a trailer rented, so place to live.
Yeah.
And then Leland had to continue schooling, and we ended up putting him in homeschool.
Yeah.
And
now this is while you're back on the reservation,
right? Back on the okay. reservation, and we had a couple of white people.
Yeah.
Who wanted.
Like yourself.
Right. Yeah. They wanted us to teach
this. Well, I mean, when you have a white person say, like, we had a bunch of white people, you kind of maybe assume, well, this person's not.
To clarify here, you can't just go out to the reservation yeah. and start a school right. for the Indian children.
And that's an important point. There has right. to be some building of relationships here.
So this is where, from my standpoint, and Dad will explain it here, but this is where the story got interesting, because this is the nucleus of the start of the school
right.
was me and two kids from – whose parents worked for local government who
yeah.
happened to be white children.
I see.
And it started with us.
Right. And we, it took us 8 years to get permission, our the acceptance to have our school.
But the people needing to grant you that acceptance was basically the leaders on the reservation.
Right.
That's
okay.
right. Yeah.
And, but we figured, well, if we take a couple of white kids, they're not going to say no. and so we started with Leland and Katie and
so a weak basketball team from the get go.
Yes, very weak.
I mean, very weak.
Are you kidding me?
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Yeah.
And then Indians began to ask us to take their kids. And
why do you think that was?
That's and it's a good question. I think it had to do with the local school.
Okay.
Not being
up to par?
I
know you're trying to be careful
yeah,
about what
yeah.
you say, but let's put it this way. There was a matter of trust
right.
in you all and what you all had built in. How many years at this point had you been at least known on the reservation, if not fully on the reservation?
Oh,
seems like at least 3 or something based on, I think, what I heard.
Yeah, 3 or 4 years.
Okay.
And
yeah.
was it that you and Mom went out there essentially and said, kind of, God, just use us? There wasn't
right.
really a plan at the beginning. So you're just kind of sitting there going, we're going to work in the community in whatever capacity
and
we can.
This is what I remember loving about this whole story. Because, Leland, how many times have you been asked in the last 20 years by well-meaning leaders, whether they're spiritual leaders, whether they're secular, you know, your job leaders being in media and all, how many people have said to you in the last few years, hey, what's your 5-year plan?
Yeah.
And I would cringe at that question. Because, again, as someone in Christian ministry – here's my plan. I feel this call to serve God.
Yeah.
I feel this. In my case, I feel this call to preach. What's my plan? What difference does it make what my plan is? It's not
plan?
About my plan.
What's God's plan?
Yeah, I just cringe at. And it would be sometimes Christian leaders in my life who would say that to me, and I'm like, really? I don't have one.
Yeah.
I just want to do because I feel this. And it's not even out of a goody-goody attitude of, well, you know, it's this urge, this something in your heart that I would imagine you and your wife felt, and Leland, you on some level, if not felt at the beginning.
I was 5.
Eventually
I didn't know what was
right,
going
that's
on.
Yeah, you had no choices.
Right? I didn't know what was
but
going on.
But there had
the
to
world.
Be some part of you and your wife that said, this is just where we're supposed to be. Not sure what we're supposed to do, but where we're supposed to be.
And let me back up a little bit, because the church where I pastored for a year, I was also the administrator of a Christian school. They had a Christian school.
Okay.
Already in existence.
Okay.
It didn't have a good reputation,
okay.
but it was in existence. And I became associated with the Accelerated Christian Education, ACE as they call it.
Okay.
I took their training, became the headmaster of the school. So I already had that background.
Yeah.
And with Leland in homeschool and then the others wanting us to take them,
yeah,
we felt that was just a natural step. And being white, we didn't feel like that there'd be any problem.
Okay.
We did think there might be problems if we were teaching the Indians, but they just seemed to acquiesce to it, and it just grew from there. We got
to the point where when we were down there last year, I mean, this school now has a building. There eventually was a basketball team. As much as I joked about earlier, there was. I mean, this didn't just stay kind of a smaller home school. This became a school and still remains today.
Oh, yes, it became a bona fide school.
Those earlier years were in our living room.
It was in our house. Every room was school.
Was school, yeah.
We had kids around the
dining
room
table.
Which in
some sense is how, I mean, I'm not trying to turn this into a political thing at all, but it's that was my school. I wasn't homeschooled.
Yeah.
But that was still school. You know what I mean? I mean, that because I would come home from school and had a mother that was home.
Right.
So that very much stayed. There remained a educational attitude once 3 o'clock came and went.
We had the living room was, my dad built these special desks for ACE that gave every kid a desk with a cubby hole.
Yeah.
And so there were three to a unit, and we had it lined, three walls of the living room were lined with these cubby hole desks.
Yeah.
And then we had our couch on the back wall. And my dad's recliner in the middle, in front. And then the TV was set up high. so that at night when we switched from school to house.
There we go.
Now we sat there and looked at the TV.
There was an arrangement.
Yeah, it was an arrangement. But in the daytime, there's kids sitting around our dining room table. Yeah. We're all in this, you know, that's all in our house.
Well, what is this? I know there's more to the story, but let's take a minute here because what Leland and I always look at is this, who are people who disrupt things, and in what way did you all feel, if ever, did you all feel, because you said earlier you didn't think there'd be a problem being accepted. Has there ever been? I mean, your 40 years of being in that field, has there ever been a moment where there was contention? There was, you know, who are these people? Why are they here? Was that ever the case as far as you know?
No, never. Leland had a little bit of a problem being accepted, but he ended up with some friends that they're still friends today.
I met them. They are very, I mean, right. they immediately accepted me because they accepted him.
Right. But other than that, we had no problem whatever. It just seemed like that they acquiesced to our being there.
Yeah.
And we began to grow. The trailer that I had rented, I ended up buying, and that became our first building.
Okay.
And we moved it. We rented a lot. We moved the trailer to that lot, which is the lot. We still have the same lot.
Okay, it's the same place that we were.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Well, where the school is or where your house is? Because
the school is.
Okay, no, they're not far apart.
Right. No. And then my daughter had some financial problems. She was living in Tucson.
Yeah.
So we took over the payments on her trailer, moved it out.
I had some financial problems in Tucson once, too. It's another story, but I did.
So we moved her trailer out, and then she became one of our teachers. And then when she left, we just went ahead and bought the trailer. So that was our second building.
Okay.
And that one is still in use as for housing for one of our teachers today. And then we ran the school for about 18 years.
Okay.
We got up to about 30-35 students.
Yeah.
All we could handle.
Were they paying anything to go to school? Was this part of the mission? How did you all do that?
I have been all of my life a tent maker minister, which following the steps of Paul, I've made my own living, my own expenses.
Yep.
And fortunately, I had good enough jobs, paid well enough that I was able to carry on the ministry.
Yeah.
And we were charging $25 a month tuition. And then
for a Christian education.
Right.
Yeah.
And my wife and I were paying the utilities, the lot rent, and the books were running about.
And some of the kids couldn't even pay the $25. Right. Yeah, they never got kicked out.
And again, that was part of the thing, again, that as I'm trying to ask these questions, I want people to understand there is a lot of poverty on these reservations.
Yeah,
there's a lot of alcoholism on these. I mean, this is an incredible mission field. If for no other reason, and it bothers me when people hear us as Christians, whenever the proper use of grammar there is, talk about our mission field as though it's only there. We only go to convert people to Christianity. No. That comes with it. The point is to go serve whatever need is needed.
Well, you were asking, I don't want to, because I want this to mainly be my dad's story, but I just wanted to interject when you asked about the acceptance process. One of the things that, and I'll say this about my parents, because this is me looking in at their ministry from all these years, and they'll probably never tell you this, but they never tried to change the culture, meaning they didn't try to do what past missionaries have done, where they tried to strip away their the Native American, who they were as people. There was this sense of, look, this is how we conduct ourselves.
Right.
You're going to have Bible study.
Yes.
But we're not going to make you cut your hair if you're a boy because your long flowing locks. That's your culture. We're not going to make you do that kind of
thing.
No, it sounds funny, but that was a big deal. And I that's part of why they never rejected us.
Saying the long flowing locks, I guess that's funny.
Is that what they called it? I don't know.
It's
how I described it. But it was beautiful when these young men would come in. But there were many, many missions
who tried
that
to
had
change.
Come out in the past. Yeah. They made the boys cut their hair. They wouldn't let them speak their language.
Right.
So is that a common thing out there then? You know, everyone having long hair? I mean, was that...
It's a traditional thing. A lot of Native American men will grow long hair.
There we go. Okay, so, and that was one thing that became a problem in the past for other people.
But other missionaries.
Something you all said...
You got to look like little white kids.
Yeah, what difference does it make?
Yeah, we never tried to make white kids or white people out of them.
Right.
That wasn't our goal. We wanted to preach Christ.
Right.
And we had one boy that, his name was, excuse me, his Indian name meant Red Warrior.
Okay.
He had hair. Gosh, he could almost sit on it, couldn't he, Leland?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, it was very long.
And he didn't accept the flag.
Okay.
When they gave the pledge, in our school, we had the American
Pledge of
Allegiance,
and
the Christian pledge.
And the Christian flag, sure.
And he would just stand there.
Okay.
He wouldn't cross his heart. He just wouldn't accept the flag.
Okay.
Period. But that wasn't, to us, that wasn't reason to kick him out.
Of course not.
And the only stipulation we had, and we still hold to it today, if you got in trouble with the law, then we would not accept you.
Okay.
We would work with you after school.
Okay.
We would tutor.
Okay.
We give them class.
Yeah.
And Carol, up until the time she actually died, the same week that I took her to the hospital, she was teaching a young girl who had a child, and she was still accepted.
Right.
She just couldn't. We wouldn't put her in with the regular.
So let's talk about them, because they were accepted. They still were, but there was a change in their program.
Right.
I mean, okay. So for the time being, at any rate, you're not going to be with almost the general population. That's not at all what I mean.
They're not prisoners.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, we're not okay. You've got different hours.
You're not going to be with the rest of the student body.
Yeah. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So there's a reason for that, which was for you all, because you keep saying we didn't accept you, but that's not true. You did.
Right.
You just accepted them after hours. There was a different rule for them now because of maybe the consequences of what they did, but there's not a kick out.
Right. We didn't want the influence.
Okay.
The wrong influence.
Yeah.
If you're in trouble with the law, and World Gospel Mission has taken over the school now. It's still in operation. They've taken over school, and they took up where we left off.
Yeah.
They still don't mingle. If you have trouble with the law, you can't go there. But I don't know what they're doing now because my wife is.
Well, I think part of your idea behind that was that you guys never were a reform school.
No, we were never.
And it wasn't that you were saying you're not acceptable,
right?
But this is your focus needed to be kids who wanted to learn,
right,
and who needed that help. And so the atmosphere there had to be kept.
I guess my point is that there was not a outright rejection.
No,
there was
never has.
We have to be. Yeah, and that to me, that's important to get across, because there's an attitude that, okay, well, you can't play by our rules, so you can't play with us. No.
There was always another chance.
Exactly. Yeah, thank you. Perfectly.
Second chance.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thirds and fourths and fifths. I mean, I've seen some kids that went through like that, and it's like, yeah, they could never maybe come back to the main student body. But they were always in the orbit.
There we go.
And they were always getting help, you know, where they needed it.
You was asking why we got the ending kids. When we took a student in, on average, they were probably 2, maybe 3 years behind mm-hmm. their chronological age okay. level.
Meaning as far as education and right. knowledge, what they should right. know at that point.
And so we had to catch them up.
Yeah.
We had students that couldn't read that, gosh, they should have been able to read perfectly.
All the Judy Blume novels.
So we had to catch them up. But the thing about what I admire so much about the ACE program is that we would catch the kids up.
Yeah.
And then they would begin to excel.
Yeah.
And they set their own pace. They could we wanted to make sure that they progressed.
Yeah.
But they set their own pace.
Yeah.
And they had to learn it. If they took a test and fail it, they had to take a class over.
Yeah.
They weren't passed just to get rid of them.
Right.
They had to know what they were learning. They had to know it in order to move on.
What is it, and I'm going to change the subject a little bit here, and I know we'll get back to the ministry part of it, but what is it you and your wife, and Leland, you can answer this some level because you spent years on there. What are your favorite parts about their culture? What has changed in you about, you know, regarding how they live and what they find important?
Yeah, you follow their clock.
which is what? I'm late for everything? Somehow I knew that.
I don't follow their clock. I've never gotten used to that.
Because when church starts at 11, church really starts when?
We call it Indian time.
Noon.
And in that regard, we do. I do have to follow
there
the
you
clock.
Go. Well, sure, you can't. If you start a church service at 11, no one's there.
No one's there.
What are you preaching to?
Sunday school, probably quarter after, maybe 20 yeah. minutes after.
Okay.
I have actually had people come into the church as we were praying the benediction.
Well, sure. So now your job as a good preacher is to preach again.
Let me give
again.
You a good
I mean,
example.
All right.
We had a wedding.
Oh.
and we set 3 o'clock. Now I try to be punctual. That's always been my goal. And I said, all right, 3 o'clock. We're going to start at 3 o'clock. And we started at 3 o'clock.
As long as neither bride and groom neither were there.
As long as they were there.
All right, there we go.
And we were done. Probably 20-minute service.
That's a good wedding. That's the kind of wedding you want.
I mingle around a little bit, and then I had another engagement, so I went out to the car and loaded everything. And the father of the groom just walked in. He said, are you done?
Oh, wow.
I said, yeah, we've been done about 15 minutes.
Oh, that's funny.
And that's just, okay, now to be clear, though, that's just how they live.
That's the way it's called
Indian. Time means nothing to them.
It doesn't mean, right.
All right. So what else, though? Because that's something, obviously, you don't like about their culture that you're trying to adjust to and never have. What is it you love? Because I was there for what, 4 days? 4 days, and there was a lot. I mean, there were wild stallions, wild ponies. Now, that's not part of their culture. It's just part of how they live, what they live around.
It's open range. Right.
Yeah, exactly. But what is it you look at after 40 years and say, I really like this about the natives. This is something that maybe even unintentionally adopted.
Other than the time schedule, I would have to say that I haven't had that much change because I've never been a person with prejudice or biases toward others.
Right.
I've always accepted who you are, what you are, and we can be friends.
Yeah.
So,
but what has changed in you about, because you've lived in their culture now for 40 years.
Yeah.
There, you know, if you go to Australia, you go to India, you go to Iraq, and you live there for years, you're going to adopt something about them. There's a part of them that's going to rub off on you. And that's what I'm asking.
He makes chili now, and I never knew him to make chili before.
Okay. Chili's coming.
You know what? I can say, too, that something – the Indian time is a funny thing to say, but when you ask what you love about their culture the most, it's tied to that. The fact that from the time that we first met, the very first Tahano Altham member
– I love that you both can say it right.
The very first time we met them, laughter is
right.
always
they
around.
They are a happy people. And yes. I guess that would be the
laughter is always around. It's part of every conversation. And I would say, but just for me personally, you didn't ask me. But
well, I did. I asked Leland.
Well, but if there's anything that's changed in me personally growing up around that is that you not to take yourself too serious. Because that's kind of how that culture was. They didn't take themselves too serious. Everything was a possible joke.
Yeah.
And that kind of openness and sincerity,
That I think that made me appreciate laughter more. And I would say that was the same of you and Mom.
Thing you'd have to get used to is when they talk,
yeah,
they talk in stories.
Okay.
If they're given a testimony in the worship service,
yeah,
it may take 15 minutes because they're going to tell the whole story. Period.
You're not going to leave out any details.
Right.
I mean, that's a good story.
That's true. They talk in stories. That has been, I guess, one thing that I enjoy about the people.
Yeah.
Another thing, and I think Leland will agree with me on this, is that they love to put it over on the white guy.
Meaning?
If it's a practical joke.
They like picking on us.
Yes.
It's
always good natured.
It's all
oh,
always.
Sure.
Yeah.
And it's in love. But like Leland said, if you take yourself too serious.
Yeah.
You've got problems.
They do not like that.
I think one of the coolest things to me. Oh, they don't like it if you take yourself too seriously.
If you come in there taking yours, look, I'm going to fix all your problems. Mm-hmm. You're out of here.
Again, it's there's such a misnomer about what mission work is.
I know.
One of the things I loved about being there, and because I was watching for this, because Leland, you and I talked about your mom and dad's mission work for years before, and we always said that was our joke between us. When are we? Is this the year we go? Are we ready to go? And finally, we did it last year, and you just kind of watched. Okay, how accepted are they? And what I loved is how many visitors at 10 o'clock at night did we have while we were there? And these weren't the call ahead before I come over. These were
You were in town.
Exactly right. And how many just came in to see you?
Yeah.
You know, to check on your dad. There was such a level of, you know, love and appreciation and family you all have very much been adopted into. I'm not going to try to say that name of that reservation because you're not part of that reservation. You're not Native American in blood, but you are in heart, it seemed like.
Well, when my mother died, we held a memorial service for her, and there was easily 500 people that came. Mm. And I remember, funny story, this is another thing I love about their culture. Is we're all, the family's all sitting on the front row, you know, the immediate family. We're all sitting on the front row. And people are, it's an open mic service.
This is how many years ago?
This is 3 years ago.
I was going to say, it wasn't too long
ago. Open mic service. And, of course, we had the plan for certain people. Some of my friends that grew up in our household, you know, that was that.
I know.
But then we left the open mic, right?
Right.
And so we're sitting there, and this guy gets up, and he gets behind the microphone, and he's like, I just want to say.
Is this your accent?
That if all these people are here tonight, she must have been a great woman. And so he goes, so I just want to sing a song.
Oh, yes.
So he starts singing a song.
Wait a minute. Keep going.
We don't know him.
Okay, I was gonna say, this guy does not know your
brother. We don't know who he is.
He has no idea who he is.
He tells us says, I didn't know her.
Apparently not. He's got to look at the crowd and say, this must be a beautiful lady.
But about the first
verse. Maestro, please.
Into the first verse, he forgets the words.
Oh, yes.
So he gives up.
Can I tell you how many services I've had that I've been a part of growing up, not on the mission field,
right?
That ended this way.
But he gives up, and then he comes down and he gives every one of us a hug.
Absolutely.
And
now I need your forgiveness.
For the rest of my life, I don't remember the guy's name, but for the rest of my life, he's my brother.
Absolutely.
Because I appreciated that because, again, it was the openness. He felt welcome.
Yeah.
And I love that about the people there.
Yeah.
You know, it's just
it was
amazing.
Not to capitalize on that story. But I'm reliving what I imagined it was like in my head right now. And I'm cringing. I'm cringing inside because
we weren't
the forgetting the words thing. I said, you know, there's nothing.
We weren't for him.
Right, exactly. I know. I'm not saying you felt bad. I think,
he never seemed to be all that worried about
it. He wasn't.
Well, because in typical situations, if you forget the words, especially at a funeral, you're jetting for the back door in your car. He's hanging out giving hugs. God bless you, my son.
He went down the whole roll. I mean, he gave everyone a hug.
Oh, that's awesome.
It was one of the greatest memories.
I bet.
It really was. And I hate to say that one of the greatest memories was at my mom's memorial. But
that should be the way it is.
It is.
But one of the greatest.
But
Absolutely.
we saw how mom and dad touched that community. That night, I think.
When you look back on the 40 years, because again, Leland's always good when we do the show to get back to the disrupting part. What is it you feel the most proud of, what you and your wife and your family, to some extent, have done, other than the molding around the doors?
That's a hard question, Cameron. I I dearly love the people.
Yeah.
There's no question. If I had to do over,
yeah,
I would do the same thing.
Yeah.
The people are loving. If how can we say this? And I don't like the word like, but if they accept you,
yeah,
you've got a friend for life.
Yeah.
And if you not accept it, it's get, the listen, other way
one,
around.
One of the things that Leland and I talked about on the way home, I guess, or, you know, as we drove, because we there were some long drives, whether from the airport to the reservation.
Back
or
life
from,
in Arizona, yeah.
Yeah, well, true. or the reservation up to the Grand Canyon and back. There were some times where we just talked, all of us. And then there were times when you and I just talked. And one of the things, big Leland, that I think is you're there now. Your wife has passed away 3 years ago. At one point, you had your whole family down there.
And not the whole family, but they've all been
there.
They've all been there.
Yeah, and in 40 years, I mean, Leland grew up on the reservations. Right. You've had, I don't want to say the core. All right, so let's not leave anybody out. But you've had your family there.
Right.
You don't any longer. I mean, your wife passed away. Leland's up here. And yet, there's no plan on you leaving. As far as, I mean, and I remember being, I think, having a conversation with you about that is, you know, because, and I don't want to bring up bad memory, but, you know, one of the things I remember more than anything is when we were down there, your cat passed away. And we had a very cool, what some people would laugh at, and I thought was so cool and meaningful, a burial
kind of a little mini funeral.
Yeah, right? A funeral for your cat. And you were devastated. I mean, you were devastated. And I kept thinking, surely this man who has lost his wife, who has lost his cat, you know, and I'm just sitting there thinking, I mean, because you were, for the next 24, 48 hours, you were just broken. And I remember thinking, surely he wants to get on a plane and move up to Kentucky and be around his family. And you don't. There's just something you feel like, and I would imagine the plan is, and I don't want to put I don't know if it is or not, I'm just guessing, but this is where you're going to be in life and death. I mean, this is you and what you do right now and what you've done your whole life.
It may not be life and death, but the Lord will have to move me.
I got you.
I don't have immediate plans to give up that ministry. Let me give you an example of the kind of love and appreciation that we have with those people. The first time I went to the hospital for surgery on my foot,
yeah,
they had to force me. The church people, I mean, yeah, they looked at my swollen foot infection.
Yeah.
They had to force me to go to the emergency room.
Sound like a man. An idiot man, but a man nonetheless.
So I'm driving, and I have a friend with me, and two more friends are in a car behind me.
Yeah.
I guess, I don't know whether I was weaving or not.
Oh, you were driving?
I was driving. And
I feel like there should have been an easier solution to this already if you've got two people in the car behind you. But nonetheless.
He's not listening.
I see. No, I'll drive myself. So you, all right, let's, you agree to go.
Right.
But you're going to take yourself,
I'm
old man.
I'm going to take myself.
All right.
The car behind me, they see me weaving.
Yes.
I don't know whether I was or not.
Well, that's part of the problem then.
I can answer that. I wasn't even there.
He was
weaving.
Yeah, all right.
So they passed me.
Okay.
And stopped.
Well, they didn't feel safe behind you.
They didn't feel safe at all.
Yeah.
They stopped, and the young lady came back,
yeah,
and she said, "Move over, I'm driving."
There we go. There we go. So she learned very quickly, all right, this is just an idiot man. He's not going to do anything I suggest, so by force, we're going to have to get where we need to go.
Move over, I'm going to drive.
Absolutely. That's funny.
But, I mean, that is typical of the way the Indians react to us. They love Carol. I mean, no. I don't know whether they love me or not. But
no, it's pretty evident they do.
But
she was there for 4 days. And
Carol was idolized.
Yeah.
She was just absolutely an angel as far as they were concerned. And no, I don't have any immediate plans to give it up. I told them 2 weeks ago.
Now, let's be clear, because I don't know if we've made this point. You're no longer involved in the school, but you're still pastoring this church.
I'm pastoring a Nazarene church.
With fantastic molding.
Right.
Yeah.
fantastic one, Cameron Mills.
Fantastic molding. I actually autographed some.
If we don't give him some props, Dad, he's not going away with this. So let's
learned a new skill that week. I'm proud of myself.
I told him, I said, my dream is to die in this pulpit.
Yeah.
And I said, if I die anywhere else, drag me back over here and we'll pretend.
Yeah, that sounds a little morbid if you ask me, but I get the premise.
Let me ask you a question, Dad. This is kind of a loaded question because it probably goes farther back than any of us have the history to be able to do. But what disrupts the lives of the people in that community?
Oh, I would have to say it's drugs and alcohol. And if they get addicted to it, and many of them do, most of them are addicted for life.
Yeah.
They never overcome it. I've had friends that I've known. Every now and then they give out what they call per capita money.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's $2,000
yeah.
for each person. I've known individuals who started drinking the moment they got their check cashed
yeah.
and never drew a sober breath until they died 2-3 weeks later.
Wow.
They literally drank
themselves to death.
Drank themselves to death. Drugs, we are through fare for what they call mules
right.
who are hauling the drugs. It affects all levels of yeah. life. We had a chief judge who was using her property right on the border
yeah.
as a stash house.
Yeah.
And, of course, she got caught. She's spending 10 years in prison for yeah. it now. Just a throughfare.
Yeah.
And
because, again, 28 miles from the border, right?
28 miles from the border.
Border
and all we have, for the most part, is barbed wire.
Yeah.
And they cut that. They're using bicycles, whatever. But I would say drugs and alcohol are the most disruptive things on the reservation.
One more
yeah. would be poverty because – believe it or not.
Which can all be related on some level, but maybe not always.
Right now, I wish I'd known you were going to do this. I'd brought a clipping. I had a piece in the paper just a couple, 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
60% of our Indian people there are living below poverty level.
Mm.
60%.
Leland brought up earlier, one of the things you and your wife and you all were so careful to do when you went down there was not to change their culture. You wanted to change their heart. You wanted to give them Christ. You wanted to educate them. You wanted to be a part of sharing with them, you know, what they could do to better their life. But you didn't change fundamental things about their
right.
culture. And, Leland, when you asked that question, that's the first thing I went to is in ignorance. And there may be some relevance to it is because we have – and this is what people – I hear people talk about this all the time when, and how we as the white people have dealt with as we took over their lands years ago. One of the things we've done is we've stripped them of their lands and their culture. Mm-hmm. And because we've done that, that's one of the reasons they fall.
These problems fill the vacuum of the dignity that our government took away from them.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, you see, there for a while, the goal was to send all the youth away to boarding school.
Okay.
And they would go to boarding school, and they were forbidden to speak their language.
Yeah.
Or they were forbidden to be taught their language. They had to cut their hair.
Yeah.
They had to dress like a white person. Now, they don't. It's not that
right.
different, but they had to. They had to be white people.
Right.
Period. And that has there's a lot of hurt there that still lingers
mm-hmm.
when they come back.
But see, that's to me what's so amazing because, again, after spending 4 days, was it 4 days? Something like that.
It was about five.
It wasn't long.
4 or 5, yeah.
Is that there just didn't seem to be anyone who did not know you, who did not love you, and who did not completely accept you on their land.
I had an advantage.
A kind heart?
Beyond that.
Okay, thank you.
As I mentioned earlier, I had some good-paying jobs. One of them, I was in charge of their construction company, a tribal-owned construction company, and I was the general manager. That put me over the entire reservation. I went places that the normal white person could never go
yeah.
because of the job I had. I was in virtually every village.
Hmm.
And because of that and having that profile being in charge, people got to know me.
Yeah.
Then, in 2004, I went on the radio.
Okay.
And I've got a one.
I forgot about that.
I got a one.
Your radio
show.
Room is nothing but old. Like what was it, CDs, tapes?
It's Southern Gospel.
That's where we go.
It's on an Indian-owned station that 23 hours a day plays
the Gaithers
in their native tongue.
No.
You tune it in, and it's like, I don't know what language that's speaking, but it's beautiful. And then there's this guy from Kentucky, and now we're going to hear from the Gaither vocal vault, you know, and it's all take me down to the there, you know, and I'm like, wow. And he's been doing it for almost 20 years.
I went on the air in 04, and then I started.
Talk about a disruptor.
Yeah, that's in their native tongue. I don't think I ever knew that.
Yeah.
I assume this was
It's their public radio station.
I know, but I assume this was Bill and Gloria singing in English.
No. The Gaither, he plays Southern Gospel on a station that the rest of the time is programming partially
there
in their
go.
Native
okay.
tongue.
All right, there we go.
So
thank
it's like
you.
There's it's such a juxtaposition
yeah,
to hear
of what it usually is, and then on the Leland Conway Hour.
But this backs up what we were saying before, how once they accept you,
yeah,
that's just part of the community.
Yeah.
So here's this redneck from Kentucky playing these Southern gospel songs, and they love it because he's part of the community. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So open. Mm-hmm. I love that.
Yeah.
Then we started.
It's again, and I don't. It's kindness. Kindness does
yeah.
that.
Well, yeah,
it does. I mean, if you had gone down there, and we talked about it, there have been failed missionaries there.
Oh yeah,
because of what they felt mattered. When, as we were talking earlier, I mean, you know, you talked about the difference in, you know, the church that wanted to change their, you know, what they were being taught or what they believed, and you said, I don't feel comfortable being a part of that. But I'm not going to be so uncomfortable that I just leave or that I rebuke you or no. It's there's still kindness, there's still love, and when you do that, it's amazing how open. I mean, this is the problem with Twitter, is because in anonymity, people say the most outlandish, hurtful things to people. People will get into arguments. This isn't to necessarily change the way anyone believes or thinks. It's just out of hate. It seems like most of the time, because when you hide behind the anonymity. It's so much easier to be hateful and cruel. When you have to be who you are and you have to face someone face to face, most people, they retort to kindness because that's all that works. We say this all the time in the Christian church. If you want to share, you know, what you love or what you know about someone like Jesus, you have to be, and you've used the word several times, accept it. They don't care what you think, right? They don't care until there's an appreciation and a love and a trust.
Right.
And that's only going to come with – that's not going to come with the media coming in and preaching, 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 preaching. It's going to come in with living, 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 living. And, yeah. and
the
then extending that trust.
I live with or among the Indians
yep.
is when several years ago I went to Southeast Asia. All the missionaries everywhere I went were in compounds, fenced in compounds.
Yeah.
On the reservation, I'm right there among them. I've got bootleggers on two sides.
Yeah. It's a true story.
Yeah. I got bootleggers on two sides. There's a constant stream of kids coming across, going to the bootleggers, are the dope dealers. There's a house just across the wash that was built with drug money.
Okay. You have to explain what a wash is.
It's
an empty dry riverbed.
It's an empty.
I know that. Remember, I had financial problems in Tucson. So I you have to explain
until
it. It's like being a. It's like if you're from Arizona, you have to explain what a holler is.
Yeah, creek. It'll be small creek.
There we go.
Creek.
A dry one, though, that only gets when the monsoons come
right.
in.
Yep.
That's when they are just floods of water.
Right. So we're surrounded by that
element.
Part of the culture, that element.
Yeah.
But I'm with them. I'm in the middle of it.
Yeah.
I'm not. In a compound, I'm not safe. And BIA, they're in a compound.
Yeah. Bureau of Indian Affairs is kind of the government's extension arm to the Native American communities, and they'll bring in people who are white that will be the administrators, and they'll live behind fences with barbed wire. They're very safe and protected.
There might be some wisdom to that, but there's not a lot of. Acceptance with that.
They're not there to do anything but what the government tells them to do.
So they're not there out of the goodness of their heart. I mean, let's just say.
They're there to do a job.
Exactly. But what I'm saying is your dad and your mom were not there to, you know, do a job and then leave. And that to me, that's what I keep trying to get back to because
dad,
to me, that was the thing that blows me away.
Dad mentioned the problems that I had when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And I think this was crucial because – and I, for lack of a better term of putting this, they sort of put me out there at the mercy of God.
Okay. Your mom and dad did.
From the church. Yeah.
And well, either trust God or don't, right?
Well, that's the truth. That's the truth. But and I had to learn some hard lessons, and I did have some trouble with some kids for a while.
Because you were different.
Because I was different.
Yeah.
But one thing they would never let me do was go home and hide from that.
Right.
And eventually I came into contact with some guys that became my dear closest friends. Yeah. And when they accepted me, no one laid a hand on me from that time forward.
One of the reasons is, if I remember correctly, is the name of one of them.
Yeah, it's a funny story. My best friend, my best friend, Michael Sixkiller.
Sixkiller, that's...
I was playing in the wash we were talking about with my G.I. Joe men.
Right.
And I was out there just messing around, and I look up, and there's this kid with a belt buckle the size of Texas.
Oh, sure.
And it says Sixkiller on it.
I want one of those so
bad. And he goes, "My name is Mike Sixkiller. I've killed 5 white boys today, and you're the 6th.
Oh.
And he chased me back to his house where I had dinner with them, and we were best friends from that point on. That's a true story.
How old was he?
I was about 9.
Michael, by the way, is the one that very kindly took, you've been there before, but took us out.
No, that was Jason.
But
Jason,
was Michael with us?
No, Jason Sixkiller is his
cousin.
Oh,
Jason. Okay. All right. My bad.
Jason,
there was a
Sixkiller. Yeah. That whole family took me in.
Yeah.
And either they were at our house.
Yeah.
Or he was at
theirs. We would literally call each other. This was total 1980s, man.
Right.
Call who's got the best dinner tonight. Right. And that's whose house we ate at. And that's the way it was. And to this day, I call Jason's mom.
Yeah.
Roy and Sandra are Michael's parents. They're the ones that came over at 10:30 at night to see us. They're like a second set of parents to me.
And these are natives.
Yeah.
Obviously, you would think that with a name like, I mean, we don't have white boy names like Sixkiller.
No, but they all had permission to whoop me, too.
Yeah.
If I stepped out of line. Mom and Dad didn't care if they whooped me. I mean, it's just, if I did something wrong, it was like there was constant discipline.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just to me, it's interesting, though, that, again, back to, okay, we all grew up. And at some point, probably feel different. You had probably a lot more of it than most of us.
Got used to that,
because there was, you know, there's a level of, I am different.
But I am different,
but maybe not.
I don't want to take away from my dad's story, but I will tell you one other thing that sort of backs up what he's saying here in this sense. When I graduated high school, okay, I could never play high school sports, but Arizona had a Tim Tebow law, kind of like where you could play for the high school team if you went to the private school.
Right, okay.
But it was always in question. So I never actually got to fully, officially suit up with the basketball team at the high school.
There might have been some other reasons for that as well. I'm just
possibly
saying. I mean, your possibly. Game, your level of...
Might have been a bit...
I'm just throwing that out there.
They didn't cut anybody, so... But at the end of the season, because I practiced with them every day, I warmed up with them, I did the whole process, and I was always...
You served as your manager.
Sort of, yeah. At the end of the season, when I was headed back to go to college...
Yeah.
My last year, and I was moving back here to Kentucky, Woody, Michael, Jason, all of them that were on the team, met us at a gas station in Tucson to catch me before I left.
Yeah.
And the coach's sons were with them, and they gave me a letter and lettered me in basketball. So I still have that letter, right? But that was like the ultimate sign of acceptance of like, you know, you're our brother. You're here. You've been here with us, and I've cherished that. That still have that B. Baba Kivri High School, and it's probably one of my most prized possessions.
I would bet.
Even though I never stepped foot on the court officially.
Right.
But again, that was that acceptance over that time, and so.
That to be fair to you, that you earned. Your mom and dad put you out there, but you earned that acceptance. Now, a lot of it comes from them and what they did for many years, but you had to earn that on your own. That was something you did.
Through following their example.
I get it. It's not, just take the compliment.
No, I understand.
You had to learn. It says this is how life works.
Yeah.
There are differences in our cultures. We got to stop saying there's not. There are.
When I had problems with kids, it was I took myself and my personal opinion too seriously. And when I learned not to do that, which is what I picked up from that culture.
And can I tell you, this is still affecting you today?
Yeah.
Every day you're on the radio with opinions that 50% of the country doesn't necessarily agree with.
More than that, probably.
Well, maybe. And they let you know that constantly. And you've always seemed, as long as I've known you, and I don't want to turn this into about you either because I get enough of you all the time. you handle beautifully. You don't ever – it's not. I don't think it's not taking yourself too seriously. I think it's something that, okay, you don't like what I'm saying. You don't like what I believe. Okay. And that's your attitude, and that's how it should be.
Sure.
It's okay.
Yeah, but that's a gift from those people.
I would think so. That would be something that rubbed off on him. And And he did have to earn the respect. Each person.
Exactly.
I mean, it's not a family affair.
Well, you said that about your wife, is that I don't know if what they feel about me, even though I think Leland and I do, Leland certainly, but they felt your wife she was cherished by them.
Right. Absolutely.
And that's something she had to earn.
And that's each of us individually. There's a lot of examples. I remember one night, Leland may remember this, we had a young lady come to the door. It's just before 9 o'clock when the store closed. And she says, Mrs. C, I've got an emergency. Can you take me to the grocery? Mm. And Carol thought, well, but she maybe needs diapers. You know, sure, I'll take you. So she gets in the car. She drives her down to the store. The girl comes out carrying a big gulp Pepsi.
Okay.
And Carol says, I thought you had an emergency. Well, I did. I was thirsty.
I mean, okay.
It was a test.
Yeah, okay.
It was a test.
It was. It was. You know, is it fair to say that the thing that I think, you know, at the beginning of this, an hour ago, I'm sitting here thinking, I know somewhat of the story. Mm-hmm. I lived the story to a very small degree last year.
Mm-hmm. You ate prickly pear cactus.
No, I put it in my mouth. I didn't eat it. Because it hurts.
When you got something with thorns,
they forgot to take the thorns out of that particular dish that I tried, by the way. But the thing that's sticking out to me right now as we wrap this up is it to be a disruptor, to be someone that is going to change this world in any way, you've got to earn the right to be heard. You've got to be willing to listen, to be... and that's why I asked you earlier about what has changed about you. You've got to be willing to be persuaded, and you've got to have a heart.
Yeah.
You hit on a key. Listen. They want to be heard. Mm-hmm. They want to be listened to. My grandson, he spent a month out there with us. And when we have our prayer service, not prayer service, but our morning service, we spend a lot of time, the bulk of the time is spent taking prayer requests mm-hmm. before we pray. And that, to me, is the most important.
Sure.
And my grandson told his mother, and I'm glad he was able to see this. He says, Poppy really listens mm-hmm. to those people. I didn't cut them off. I don't cut them off. If they're going to talk 15 minutes, they're going to talk 15
minutes.
And they
talk in stories, even with their prayer requests, right?
Right. Oh, yeah. They got to tell all the details.
All the details, yeah.
And I let them go.
Yeah.
And sometimes we'll spend 45 minutes, believe it or not, in prayer requests because that is their culture.
Yeah.
I'm not that kind of a disruptor.
You don't disrupt that part. Well, let me ask you, Dad, too, because as we do kind of wrap this up, what would you say to – because there's a lot of people that are looking for a calling in life. The three of us here believe that calling comes from God.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of people out there, whether they're secular and listening to this or whether they're Christian, that are looking for a calling in life and a sense of higher purpose. How do you go about finding that from your perspective?
It's a good question. I guess I can go back to my original call into the ministry. I felt an impression, and I believe it to be of the Lord. Mm-hmm. I felt an impression that I was going to be going into the ministry. God will confirm that impression in a multitude of ways. The Bible, prayer, or individuals. Mm-hmm. So the night I responded to the actual call and I went to a public altar and I answered God's call to preach,
yeah.
The evangelist said to himself immediately as I was coming forward, here comes a man for the ministry, mm-hmm. period. Mm-hmm. After the service, I felt like I had to go talk to the pastor.
Sure.
And I went to his house, Carol and I did. And when he opened the door, I said, Pastor, I need to talk to you. And he got so excited, he says, you've been called to preach. Mm-hmm. And he left Carol and me standing there and ran to tell his wife that Leland had been called to preach.
Yeah.
his wife comes in drying her hands on a dish towel. She said, well, I knew that 6 weeks ago.
Speaking of telling stories with details.
Well,
I love it.
And then Carol chimes in, and she said, the Lord told me 6 months ago I was going to be a preacher's wife.
She hadn't told you this?
No. No, we had never discussed it. I crossed the Aroostook River going into Fort Fairfield. I was still in the Air Force, by the way.
Okay.
I crossed the Aroostook River going into Fort Fairfield to church. It was on, I think, Easter Sunday morning, and I just felt that impression. And the only time that I ever spoke to her about it, I turned to her and I said, Carol, I think I'm going to be a preacher. And I never...
And her response to that in that moment was...
She said, that's fine.
it's kind of like that pat on the head. Okay, buddy.
Okay, baby, whatever you think.
That would be my mom, too.
So in October when I responded, then I had all of this confirmation.
Yeah.
How can you deny God's call if you got all this confirmation?
The short of it,
know that God has called you.
There's going to be confirmation, though, I think, to answer
God, it. I think God will always.
If you're looking for that, be open to listening for it, because there will be a confirmation. Whether look and to be fair, because you asked the way you asked this, Leland, was look, there are some people out there that don't believe that listening to this, that don't necessarily believe what we believe. They don't believe the Bible is the Word of God. They don't believe God exists, but they're still looking for that calling. The point then is, Big Leland, is that regardless, you know, and that we believe that's how it comes, but be open to answering that calling, whatever it is.
Yeah. Right. And be open to it.
And I would just ask, I guess one other thing, too, there's been a lot of sacrifice. You're a very talented builder. I've shown some of the projects that you've done to Cameron around here in Central Kentucky.
You've seen the molding on his church.
You could have stayed here and had a very lucrative career. Instead, you've given up everything monetarily. You and I joke about how, I'm not getting an inheritance.
Nope. Maybe some books.
Maybe some Gaither CDs.
But you know what? I can't think of anything better as an inheritance than to have a mother and father who literally gave it all. So I guess my question would be, was it worth it? Has it been?
I've got a motto in the front of my book, Bible. It says, no questions. Mm-hmm. No regrets, no return. And that would be sum up my life as a Christian, as a minister, as a missionary. I've got absolutely no regrets. I've lost my wife to the mission field.
Yeah. And I'm not trying to make light of this, but you lost your cat last year. And I know that sounds so silly. And
if you want to go a little bit further, I lost my dog.
Lost your dog before that, right? I mean, because that was – you had lost your – because remember,
absolutely a country
this.
Song.
Yeah. But it was – look, I'm really not trying to make light of that, because I was sat there and watched you that weekend or that week and just after – and it was – I mean, it cut you. And I imagine that. But, I mean, that was – again, that you have lost a lot. But – to have no regrets on anything. I'll end this by saying this, because the one thing, last thing I noticed, because I think, Leland, to be honest, it was either the night before we were heading back to the airport or the morning of. I forget when we left. And that was when we were driving back to Phoenix, I think, right?
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
But I remember it being either dusk or dawn, because I remember the light. And there were two natives, looked like younger girls, who had crossed. They had not come in the front entrance of the church, because there really isn't one. It's all, you know, property to property. And they had crossed over, just kind of walked across the it's not a field, it's a desert. Walked across the sand and the rocks, walked up to your church building, and were filling two big jugs with water. And I'm watching this, I'm thinking, okay, are they, I mean, and just out of curiosity, I mean, they don't seem to be hiding. They don't seem to be being secretive about this. They seem to be acting like this is normal. And I'm watching you, or you, one of the two of you, and I forget which one it was, but you saw it too.
Yeah.
And there's no reaction, because that was normal.
And that actually, was okay. The rest of the story on that was, it was a family that had a water cutoff. And Dad had been letting them get water from the church for weeks.
That's the point, is there doesn't need to be, for you two, a rest of that. It's
right.
You need, come take.
The Disruption Zone. Thank you, Dad.
Thank you.
Big Leland, Old Leland.
Yeah, Big Leland, Little Leland.
I'm Little Leland.
Yep.
Young Leland.
Yeah.
Cameron Mills.
Thanks. Go!